If anybody's got any information, they ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Yeah, absolutely. Good evening, truth seekers, on this St. Patrick's Day Eve. Luck of the Irish to you and all the Blarney Stone and yada yada. Author and activist Larry Everett is going to join us at the bottom of this first hour, just a few minutes, to talk about the march on the Pentagon tomorrow, the first march in 40 years. The last time it was done, Abby Hoffman was involved and suggested that they levitate the place 300 feet off the ground. Larry Everett is also, he's involved in the march deeply, and he's also the author of Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq and the U.S. Global Agenda. He was arrested yesterday on Capitol Hill, along with 10 others. They were trying to attend a hearing on war funding when they were arrested. But our focus tonight, all night, other than that brief interview, is going to center on Valerie Plame's testimony at the House Oversight Committee hearing today. We'll also play some clips from 2003 to remind us all what Raisin Brain and Simple Scotty and the rest of these thugs were spinning about Plamegate back then. Kathy took Molly off to her music lesson or class or whatever. Molly doesn't play an instrument yet, but she's 2.5. She goes to a music appreciation class that just happens to be run by a friend of ours who is a musician, a singer, and a guitar player. And, you know, there's 6 or 8 little kids in there in Molly's class, and they have this hour or 50-minute class, and it's really doing great. So Kathy and Molly left me alone just about 10 o'clock this morning Eastern time when the hearings began. And I have to say, I could not peel myself away from what I watched. It was just astonishing. One thing I came to realize is, even on a deeper, more visceral level than I thought possible, is that every statement by every Republican, whether it was in the White House or the Congress or on radio, every single Republican, every single Bush apologist, every single right-wing talk show host, every statement made about the Valerie Plame case over the past almost 4 years, or I guess it's been 4 years, has been not just a lie, but a conspiracy to keep the American people stupid. Participating in that conspiracy was every single right-wing radio and television talking head, all of them, from Limbaugh all the way down to the slime of, I don't know, people like Hugh Hewitt, Malzberg, this thug in New York. Everybody involved with covering up what really happened worked together. If there was any way to indict every one of these people on conspiracy charges, it should be done. Of course, it's not going to happen. But as I watched that testimony this morning, and then watch this creature named Victoria Tensing, who used to work in the Reagan White House, come out and try to discount what Valerie Plame said under oath, what the director of the CIA has said, that Valerie Plame was in fact a covert, undercover, secret CIA agent. And this Tensing creature comes out and tries to discount that. This has been one of the the guffaw lines, the ha-ha-ho-ho knee slappers from these right-wing pigs on talk radio, is that Valerie Plame was not covert or not undercover. And, of course, they knew otherwise. Every one of these sons of bitches knew otherwise. But this was the trick bag that they more or less successfully put the American public into over the past 4 years. Right-wing talk radio is a threat to this republic. Are you aware of that? I guess you are. But right-wing talk radio is undermining everything that's decent and constitutional and lawful about this country. Right-wing talk radio floods the airwaves 24/7 with deceptions, misinformation, disinformation, and lies. And until we purge the airwaves of right-wing talk radio, it's going to be that way. The truth does not get out. Now, I've talked about my lack of faith in mainstream media. That still exists. But right-wing talk radio is not mainstream media. It is a filthy, sick, evil, enabling mechanism to put fascism in place here. Because every one of these right-wing bastards on talk radio and talk television considers himself or herself to be utterly safe. That fascism is something they can live with. They are all cowards. They are all liars. They are all very well paid to do what they do. I don't know what to say. I really don't. Where it concerns right wing talk radio, it is as though right wing talk radio was designed to destroy the country. To destroy the country as we know it. Not to turn into smoking rubble, but to destroy the country as we know it and to replace this republic with a fascist state. And they are doing a damn good job of it, aren't they? They really are. With the exception of the war and a couple other issues, the occupation, right-wing talk radio has sucked the brains out of just about every single person who listens to it. You know, we, over the past couple of weeks, we've been reading a lot of emails to you over the air about people who have written in with utter, absolute frustration about the inability to get to the truth. The frustration of hearing stuff 24/7, coast to coast, border to border, from right-wing talk radio that thinking people know is a lie. The hammering continues, though. It never stops. And eventually, those among us who can't take the time to sort out the 90% of this BS from the little 5 or 10% of truth that gets through from people like Hartman or Stephanie Miller or Randy Rhodes or me, and can't separate it, can't sort it out. What happens eventually is you just kind of unconsciously give up. You just give up. Because the onslaught is never ending, never ending. These right-wing hyenas, this is why I refuse to do talk television anymore. I've spent too many times with up against some right-wing hyena, like Steve Malzberg was the last one, who sits there and laughs, a fake laugh, like somehow the laughter is supposed to destroy the truth. I hate sharing a country with these people because of what they have done. To the ability of the American public to sort through things and say, okay, well, this is true and this is not true. This is a lie and this is not a lie. The ability to do that has been, if not fatally, mortally wounded. It's on life support now. And it's not going to get any better. I don't understand radio networks or syndicating companies or broadcast conglomerates that put this crap on the air. I don't know what these people, what are they doing? Is it because they think that this is what America wants to hear? This is not what America wants to hear. America wants to hear, at the very least, a balance. But if people could filter this garbage out of their heads, they'd want to hear the truth. My career has been miserable because I don't play that game. I will not do it. I've been told by everybody from Air America to Clear Channel to Cox Communications to ABC Radio that what I was doing was too edgy. too edgy. And all I've done in 24 years of radio is tell the truth. Now I'm not here tonight to whine about that. I'm just saying that until right-wing talk radio, as it is presently sloshed across the country, until that stops, America is we're never going to come out of this. These people are turning our republic into a brain-dead state that allows fascism to take hold. And that's the truth.
Propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda. 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 Try and convince them.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
You know, on the theory that most of us, myself included, our attention span, our ability to remember things beyond five news cycles has practically been wiped out. That is the function of television, is to make you forget. But it's also the function of talk radio. Right-wing talk radio, which is 90% of it, is to not just make you forget, but to wipe out any memory that you might have of lies already told you. And then when the truth does, if it does, manage to wriggle free, like it did in the hearings today, you're not supposed to be able to connect that truth to the lies that were fed to us by right-wing talk radio, mainstream television news, and the Bush crime family. The break is supposed to be so absolute from steady drumbeat of right-wing propaganda that we can't, when we finally do hear the truth, we can't remember the lie that makes the truth today seem so astonishing to finally hear.
Don't you think that's also primarily because we're constantly told that things like Anna Nicole Smith's death is news?
Right. Well, the corruption of news is part of it. But the bigger issue here, you know, Limbaugh and Hannity and the rest of these pigs don't talk about Anna Nicole Smith. What they talk about is absolute lies. Everything that comes out of their mouths is a lie. So that when the truth finally does emerge, we don't remember where the hell the starting point was. Part of what we're going to do tonight is go back to 2003 and play some sound for you. So you can hear how the lies were being set up and forced fed into the American gullet by just one part of this conspiracy, and that is the White House press office operating in tandem with Bush. The really vile, filthy aspect of all this is right-wing talk radio. I swear to God, I feel like Zell Miller when he challenged Chris Matthews to a duel. I would love to do that with these people. I really would. I'm a better shot than they are, for sure, whether it's pistols, handguns or rifles. I would love to do it. I'm just furious. I am furious about what has happened to my country. I really am. The hearings today further showed to me, and you too if you watched it, how completely corrupt every single Republican office holder is, and how totally corrupt, in a co-conspiratorial sort of way, every single right-wing talk show host is, and every single person who votes for Republicans. You cannot escape that essential truth. You can spin it. You can justify it. You can rationalize it. If you are a Republican, you do that all the time. How do you do it? Well, you fall back on Jesus and you say, well, things will work out. Or you'll say, well, they know more than I do. Every single Republican is corrupt, either actively corrupt like Bush or passively corrupt like people who vote Republican. But the corruption is there, and that is what is eating holes in this republic. It's just sad. Now, unrelated to what I said, because we're going to focus on this all night, and I'd ask you to hold your calls. We're not even going to put people on hold. It's pointless. If we get to a point where I think we can weave some calls in, we'll do it. But I got an email from Casey Lee in Texas, and this is what Casey Lee wrote. Mike, I'm sick, just sick, almost physically so. I read an article today and just went numb. Chucklenuts has, as of March 5th, signed into law a bill that allows Mexican truck drivers to cross into the U.S. and roam freely to deliver freight to U.S. destinations. I'm not racist in any way, and although the article was to a degree, I can understand the writer's concern. My company sometimes sends us to Canada, and when I go, I feel guilty. I know I'm hauling a load that a Canadian driver could be hauling to help feed his family. In some parts of that country, everyone speaks French, and all the signs are in French. I hate going there and got so lost the last time I was there, I told my dispatcher I couldn't go there anymore. Why? She asked. I can't read the signs. I can't speak the language, and I don't know the laws. It's just unsafe for me to be here, I answered. Hence my point. Drivers coming here, unsupervised from Mexico, are dangerous. A large number of Mexican trucks are turned away from U.S. borders daily due to failed safety inspections. What about the ones that meet the bare minimum and are allowed in, or worse, the ones that don't and slip by? How will Mexican drivers, never having seen a snowflake in their life, handle downtown Chicago in wintertime? Doesn't dumbass in the White House realize what a threat this poses to his so-called war on terror? Now any Mexican truck driver seeking to supplement his income could be recruited by terrorist organizations to carry God knows what into our country. And finally, what about me? How the hell am I supposed to compete with someone willing to do my job for a third of my income? Not that I blame them. If I lived there, I'd probably be coming to work here too. This is all I know how to do professionally. Trucking has always been known for job security, up until now. I would ask what to do, but you're probably just give me a depressing answer like, nothing you can do. As long as dear leader is in power, we're all screwed. I guess I just needed to vent. Love the show. Keep telling it like it is. Casey Lee, Texas.
It is wrong for the Congress to discriminate against Mexican trucks.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's 26 before the hour. And again, we're going to be providing complete coverage for you from the hearings today, what exactly happened, and going back for context, the lies that were told by the Bush crime family back in 2003 when this all began. Larry Everest is the author of a book entitled Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq and the U.S. Global Agenda. It was put out by Common Courage Press about 3 years ago. He has also covered the Middle East and Central Asia for about 20 years. He is involved in the march on the Pentagon tomorrow. He joins us now from Washington, D.C. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, nice to be with you.
I understand you were arrested yesterday, but obviously you're out now. What was the charge? Disorderly conduct or trying to save the Republic?
Well, take your pick, isn't it the same thing? Anyway, no, it was an illegal assembly. A number of us had gone to the House Congressional Appropriations Committee hearing, a very crucial hearing where $100 billion more for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan was being marked up to put on the floor and voted on. And very disturbingly, this is more than Bush had even asked for.
Right.
And even more troubling was the fact that a few days earlier, the Democrats had removed any provision by which Bush had to get congressional approval before war on Iran. Well, just given the record of this administration in launching illegal preemptive wars, based on lies and deception, and given the similarities between the propaganda and the military buildup now taking place around Iran, as compared to what we saw in 2002 with Iraq, this was just a green light to Bush. You can go ahead and attack Iran. We are not going to stop you. And I and others felt this was outrageous. I was on a panel the night before with Representative Dennis Kucinich, who talked about this being a moment of peril. He talked about the Democrats' refusal to put impeachment on the table, constituting a green light as well to Bush, telling him he wouldn't be stopped, he would not be held accountable. So a number of us went to this hearing. We wanted to go in and hear what was being done in our names. We wanted to make our concerns heard. When we got there, we found out that the Congress had packed this hearing with staffers and news people. There were no seats for the public there, and that was just too much. A number of us gathered in front of the door, demanded to be let in, demanded that funds be cut for the war, that the war be ended, that there not be a war on Iraq, on Iran, that the people should be let into this hearing, and we were arrested. And a number of people were also arrested for making a similar protest on the steps of the Rayburn Building, the House Congressional, where the House Congressional offices are. So there were 10 of us in jail, but this is the kind of stand thousands of us need to make, in my opinion.
Yeah, I certainly agree, and that's something that has been the main text of this program for years. Let me ask you, with no trace of irony in the question, how close is this country to, I use the word fascism, other people may use the word corporatism or statism or totalitarianism, but fascism of the Italian or the Spanish kind seems comfortable to me in terms of being used to identify the Bush crime family, Bush administration. So how close are we? I maintain we're very, very close, if not there already.
I think we're extremely close, and I think the main thing is that we are moving in that direction, and this is a trajectory that has to be halted and reversed. That's why I think it's so important to impeach Bush, to remove these criminals from office, and to repudiate this whole agenda that they have been carrying out, which has included the Military Commissions Act legalizing torture and stripping habeas. It's included trying to insert a bill, a language in an appropriations bill earlier, revealed about several weeks ago by the New York Times, making it easier for Bush to declare martial law by basically nullifying posse comitatus and giving Bush police power at the state level. Of course, we know about the Patriot Act, the NSA spying, the opening of postal mail, and there's the element of waging illegal preemptive war, which I've heard Daniel Ellsberg say that the war on Iraq is legally indistinguishable from the invasion of Poland. Both were wars of aggression. So I think that unless Bush is we can't wait this out until Bush is gone. If his program and his agenda is not repudiated, these things are going to stay in place. And the Democrats have said, I heard Chuck Schumer the other day on Rosie O'Donnell's show saying, no, I'm not going to repeal the Patriot Act. Well, and Hillary Clinton just yesterday saying, no, we're going to stay in the Middle East. So the Democratic leadership has proven unwilling to reverse this program and unable to reverse it. And I feel that's why it's so important for people to really realize this is the direction we're going, that speaking of fascism is not hyperbole. It is not scare rhetoric. It accurately describes the kind of direction this society is going in. And, you know, just the other thing, Mike, the thing that just bugs me no end is when people are always talking, let's learn the lesson of the Holocaust, let's learn the lesson of Hitler, let's never let it happen again. But meanwhile, they talk about Hitler as if he was a man from Mars that somehow got control of Germany, and no one knows why, and then unleashed his mad scheme. No, look, Germany was a world power, an industrialized capitalist country that was in a crisis that needed global expansion. And, of course, no two historical situations are the same, you know, so there's not an exact parallel. But I do think there is a parallel in that the people like Bush and Cheney feeling the American empire is at the peak of its power, and unless they do this war on the world for the control of the Middle East, control of oil, preventing any rivals from arising, everything they've spelled out in their documents, as I discussed in my book, they feel unless they do this now, this empire will go the way of the previous, the British, the French, the Austro-Hungarian, two Russian empires, and so on. And this is why they're doing this. So there's a deep economic, social, and historical parallel, too. So I think that these are important things to be alarming, sounding the alarm about, as you've mentioned.
You know, I have something taped right above my the glass here in my broadcast studio. Maybe you've heard this before. I'm not sure who to credit it to, but the saying is there are four boxes for use in the defense of liberty: soap, ballot, jury, ammo. Use in that order, starting now. Now, I have to ask you, because I wrestle with this question all the time. I bring it up on this program. I've been told to dial it back sometimes by the various radio stations that that carry this program. And that question is, what will it take? What in the name of God is it going to take to get not tens of thousands of people in the street, Larry, but millions in the street to resist what is so, or should be, so obvious an attempt to destroy this constitutional republic and replace it with the kind of a Hitlerian government? You know, we point out last night, Hitler didn't invade Germany. He was German. He did it all legally. And so has Bush, with quotes around the word legally. So I'm just curious as to what your take is on what will it take to move tens of millions of people off their asses and into the streets, or is that just simply not going to happen? I'm starting to get the horrific feeling that it's not going to happen. And since I have to take a break right here, I want you to just maybe think on the, I'm sure you have an immediate answer, but I've got to pause here for about 3 minutes for a break. And then when we come back, I'd like to get your answer on that. And also, just a couple of minutes on what's happening tomorrow in D.C., this march on the Pentagon. I don't think it's even partly fun anymore, like Abby Hoffman wanted to levitate the damn place 300 feet off the ground 40 years ago. Those days seem so quaint now. So if you'll just hold on a second, Larry,
sure,
we'll come
Mike.
Back. And if you'll just answer that question for me as best you can, and then a quick little comment about tomorrow's event. Our guest is Larry Everest. He's the author of Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq, and the U.S. Global Agenda. It's a Common Courage Press book put out in 2004. If you haven't read it, maybe you should. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. Ten before the hour, we are talking with Larry Everest, author of Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq, and the U.S. Global Agenda. He is also extremely active in the anti-war movement, in the pro-justice movement. He's been speaking across the country about the impending attacks on Iran. And as you heard, he spoke Wednesday night at a forum on Iran with in D.C. with, among others, Denis Kucinich. He's probably been busted about as many times as I have. I want to ask you, Larry, first of all, what, in your opinion, will it take to get millions of people in the street to stop this, or do we not care anymore?
Well, first of all, a recognition that that's exactly what we need, that waiting for the Democrats to change things, waiting for somebody else to be elected in 2008 is simply unconscionable and unacceptable. By that time, Bush's whole program, we could be in another war, we could have nuclear weapons used, Bush's whole program will be locked into place. The second thing I think is important is we should understand there is the potential for that if those who see the need for that kind of action act decisively now. I mean, millions of people hate Bush. The problem is they're passive. They're waiting it out. They think this is all going to go away. But the actions of a determined minority, which is always the way it is, can involve them, can draw them forward. The other thing I think that shows their potential, look, no, you know this, Mike, we're in a race against time here, and there are no guarantees on this. So this is a very urgent situation. But the Bush regime is also in deep trouble. The establishment is very divided over what to do in Iraq and the Middle East. We're going to have other shocks that shock millions of people more into political life. So to me, the key thing is, now, for those of us who understand just how horrible this is, we need to act. We need to change our lives like people like Aaron Watata did. He saw the war was wrong. He risked his whole military career and took a courageous action. Cindy Sheehan, after her son was killed, dedicated her life to stopping this war and changed her life. And that is the kind of actions all of us need to take in any way we can, and we also need to hook up with organizations. None of us can do this on our own. We need to link up with organizations like World Can't Wait. I mean, after one talk I gave, somebody in the audience said, "Hey, Larry, you think the problem is with the good people, don't you?" And I said, in a way, that's true. The good people need to start really making this their life mission right now to stop this and to, hey, there are three people in your town who don't like the war, fine. Organize a group with those three people and start protesting and hooking up with others. This is the kind of determination that we need to see. Link up with people like, in my view, one of the good organizations is World Can't Wait, drive out the Bush regime. Get organized with them. They'll help you get organized.
That's worldcan'twait.net, isn't it? Or is it .org?
Well, you can either go worldcan'twait.net. .net will work or .org will work.
Right.
I can give out a phone number if you like.
Go ahead.
Yeah, 866, that's a toll-free number, 866-973-4463, 866-973-4463. But I think it's wrong for people to say protest doesn't do any good. The problem isn't there have been too many protests. The problem is there haven't been enough of them. We haven't seen the campuses shut down. We haven't seen things that we saw in the Vietnam era of soldiers just saying, look, I'm not going to fight anymore. People laying down in front of troop trains or what have you. This is the kind of level of action that we need. Really, the world, the fate of the future of the world depends on this. We're in this horrible situation where the more the United States attacks these countries in the Middle East, the more it fuels this very ugly form of reactionary kind of Islamic fundamentalism, and then Bush tries to use that to justify further attacks, and on it goes. And, of course, attacking Iran would just be throwing gasoline on that whole thing, and by millions of us stepping out and saying we want a future without war, without repression, where people all over the world are respected, would be creating something entirely different that doesn't exist in the world, giving hope to people all over. That's the stakes of it. And people need, it's just immoral not to act in a situation like this and thinking because you don't like Bush and you didn't vote for him last time that that's enough. It's not enough.
Right. Well, that's a good point of view. Taking no action at all is in itself an immoral act. Let me ask you, we only have about a minute left here, Larry. The march tomorrow in D.C. Steps off at 12:30 p.m., starting just an idea where this place, 23rd and Constitution, that's the park there?
That's correct. That's right, and we're gathering from starting at 10 in the morning. The march steps off at 12:30 for the first time in since Vietnam. We're marching on the Pentagon. The march is led by veterans and military families, and our demands are no, stop the war now, no redeployment, no timetables a year from now. Stop it now, no attack on Iran. And very importantly, impeach Bush and Cheney for war crimes. Impeach these guys.
That's the key.
We think it's significant. And anybody in earshot who can get to D.C., very important to have thousands there. There will also be demonstrations across the country on Sunday, the 18th, in different cities, more local demonstrations. Again, you can go to World Can't Wait. .org, and there'll be a list of all this on the website.
Larry Everest, thanks a lot for joining us. That phone number that you called in on, please keep it and check in with us periodically, would you?
I certainly do. I'd love to be back. Enjoy talking with you, Mike.
All right, Larry, take care and watch your back, all right?
I'll do so, and you too.
All right. Thank you, sir. Larry Everest, who is the author of Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq and the U.S. Global Agenda, published by Common Courage Press about 3 years ago. If you get a chance, you might want to get it. We'll be back after the break, and then we are going to slide into the slime of the Valerie Plame case. Welcome back, 6:30 past the hour. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. As I watched the hearings today before Waxman's committee, the part that was the most astonishing to me was the second part. After Valerie Plame testified, and we'll have some of her testimony here in a moment, but a man named James Nodell, K-N-O-D-E-L-L, who is the director of the Office of Security at the White House, he told the committee today that he was aware of no internal investigation or report into the leak of CIA agent Valerie Plame. Now, the reason that was stunning to me is again, the lies that have been told by the Bush crime family, their spokesmen and women, the media, the filthy right-wing radio talk show hosts in this country who are killing us all, that has been the mantra for the past 4 years. There's an investigation. There's an ongoing investigation. There is an investigation. We're checking it out. There's an investigation. Over and over and over. So comes today James Nodell, director of the Office of Security, and says there is no investigation. There never was. Now, the Bush thugs had first opposed Nodell testifying, but after a threat of a subpoena from the committee yesterday, he was allowed to appear today. Now, understand something. That's very important. Threat of a subpoena. Remember, everybody in this White House is basically a coward. A sneak, a liar, and a coward. And if these goddamn Democrats would just stand up on their hind legs and bat one of these people across the face with a legal document, they collapse into a pool of their own urine. They are cowards. Nodell showed up and said that he had started the White House in August 2004, a year after the leak. But his records show no evidence of a probe, investigation, report, nothing. Waxman recalled that Bush had promised a full internal probe. I'm not talking about special prosecutors. I'm not talking about media investigations. I'm talking about what Bush talked about, a full internal probe. Nodell repeated that no probe took place and was not happening today. Nodell said he had no conversations whatsoever with Bush, Cheney, Rove, or anyone about the leak. He was asked by Waxman if he knew that this was an issue of concern, and he said, yes. He was asked if he learned this from the White House, and he said, no, I learned it through the press. Nodell testified that those who had participated in the leaking of classified information were required to turn themselves in, and he was not aware of that anyone had done that, including Rove. Representative Elijah Cummings, who sits on the committee, said all of this was shocking. Waxman said that Nodell's office, the lack of action by his office or anyone, was a breach within a breach. And Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton called this a dereliction of duty. I can call it something, but I'll lose my broadcast license if I do. So here we go. Dr. James Nodell, Director of Office Security, the White House. And sitting at the table with him was Bill Leonard, the Director, Information Security Oversight Office, National Archives and Records Administration. Nodell introduces himself and explains his role in investigating security breaches and ensuring that everyone in the Executive Office of the President, the EOP, is aware of the rules and policies around security and protection, for example, of classified information and CIA agents. In other words, he's the guy who's supposed to make sure nobody in the White House leaks classified information. Of course, he came on board after Valerie's name was outed. So you've got to assume that his predecessor either played by the same rule book as this jerk, or the rule book was put together after he came on board. I kind of hold with the former. And so as expected here, he has no information about the whereabouts of his predecessor, one Jeffrey Thompson, who was in charge during the first year. This piece of human waste has been in charge during the 3 years subsequent to the leak. Jeffrey Thompson has disappeared. Nodell said, well, I think he went to Georgia. He probably went hunting with Cheney, if you get my drift.
My name is James Nodell. I'm the Chief Security Officer for the Office of Security and Emergency Preparedness, Office of Administration, Executive Office of the President. The Office of Security and Emergency Preparedness, commonly referred to as OSEP. OSEP provides a variety of services that ensure the proper protection of EOP resources, including information, people, and facilities. In reference to the committee's request that I provide information on White House procedures for safeguarding classified information, OSEP follows guidelines set forth in various executive orders that deal with classified information. Mr. Chairman, I'm not able to discuss individual cases or investigations. I would be happy to answer questions related to the procedures for handling classified information or corresponding to the unauthorized release of classified information.
Oh, well, that's real white of you, to turn a phrase. All right, so Waxman asks Nodell what actual investigations of leaks were conducted by his office. Waxman begins with questions about Ari Fleischer, the former White House press geek. And here, know-nothing Nodell first says he's not going to discuss investigations at all, and then comes back and says it happened before his tenure. So, you know, I know nothing.
Let me start with the former White House press secretary, Ari Fleischer. Mr. Fleischer had conversations with Walter Pincus of the Washington Post and David Gregory of NBC News about Ms. Wilson's identity. These conversations took place in July 2003. Almost immediately, it was clear that Ms. Wilson's identity was classified information. Mr. Nodell, the regulations require Mr. Fleischer to report what he knew about this disclosure to you. Did he do that?
Mr. Chairman, I thought the agreement here for me today was I would not discuss specific investigations.
Wilson yeah. case.
Well, as I understood it, we wouldn't discuss the Libby case. That was the concern that we were going to go rehash the Libby case. But this is the Valerie Plame Wilson case, and it's a question that Congress is exploring to find out whether our security laws and regulations are working.
Mr. Chairman, that happened before my tenure in this current position. I began this position in August of 2004.
And this guy, if you saw any of this, this guy personifies and epitomizes the good German or the good Nazi. No offense to our German listeners. The good Nazi, the guy who doesn't want to know anything, doesn't know anything. He has a doctorate. I don't know what the doctorate is in, probably criminal justice. Just an absolute bull-necked thug. Waxman tries again, this time asking if Karl Rove was investigating for leaking Plame's identity to reporters.
Do you know whether Karl Rove, the president's senior political advisor, came forward and reported what he knew about the breach of Mrs. Wilson's identity? After all, we learned that Mr. Rove talked about her identity with at least two journalists, Robert Novak and Matthew Cooper of Time magazine.
Mr. Chairman, I have no knowledge of any investigation within my office.
Was any corrective action taken? Was any disciplinary action taken against Mr. Rove for failing to report his knowledge of the breach of Mrs. Wilson's identity?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Waxman then asked him if there was supposed to be some kind of report filed in his office, if there was a major security breach, such as, oh, I don't know, let me think of one. Outing a covert CIA agent's status in the White House. If that security breach occurred there, which the whole goddamn world now knows it did. So Waxman simply wants to know from this thug, this Nazi, if there was supposed to be some kind of report filed. Some kind of something in triplicate or quadruplicate or quintuplicate where everybody gets a copy and they can all sit around and say, oh, God, did that really happen? Wait till you hear the answer. We'll be back.
You can have my Shinka or my sweet Kielbasi. You can have my Kirogi. Bring me back my Kiska. Who stole the Kiska? Who stole the Kiska? Who stole the Kiska from the butcher shop? Yakov found the Kiska. Yakov found the Kiska. Yakov found the Kiska. He hung it on the rack. He found the Kiska. He found the Kiska. He found the Kiska. Hung it on the rack.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. Back to the hearing today, Nodell, who allegedly is the chief of White House security, and the guy who's supposed to make sure that when something like the Valerie Plame incident occurs, that his office conducts an investigation, and keeping in mind, of course, that that's all we've heard for 4 years from these lying bastards, that an investigation was ongoing. So Waxman now asks him if there was supposed to be some kind of report filed in his office if there was a major security breach, like the outing of a covert CIA agent's status. And remember, Bush has repeatedly said that he wanted an investigation. Kind of makes you wonder why there wasn't even a report filed on this issue. Serious issue, as Bush called it. Well, you know the answer to that. Now, after Waxman's question, you'll hear Representative Elijah Cummings, Democrat of Maryland, chime in to make sure he had heard correctly, that there was no report and no investigation of the Plame affair. Do you suppose Bush didn't want to know who leaked because he already knew?
Wouldn't there have to be a report that would have been filed in your office?
If we were notified.
There is not one on file.
That's correct.
You know that there is no report on file that classified information was disclosed and that report was about Fleischer or Rove or all the other names.
Mr. Chairman, not within the Office of Security and Emergency Preparedness.
Let me ask you a few questions because you in answering some of the chairman's questions, you left me shocked. And I want to make sure I heard you right. Are you saying with regard to this case, that is the outing of Valerie Plame Wilson, there is no report?
Not in my office, there is not.
And are you also saying that there was no investigation?
Not by my office.
Not by your office.
Then by who? Or by whom? Waxman and Cummings continue to tag team. You want to call him Nodell or Know Nothing? This is priceless, showing how even though it was clear there was a crime inside the White House, there was no investigation.
Now, as I understand it, there was an obligation for the White House to conduct an immediate investigation to find out whether they needed to suspend security clearances of somebody who had leaked this information, to maybe take disciplinary action against an individual who might have been involved, and thirdly, to find out who divulged it. Do you know whether there was an investigation at the White House after the leaks came out?
I don't have any knowledge of an investigation within my office.
Ever?
I do not.
Because the president said he was investigating this matter, was going to get to the bottom of it. You're not aware that any investigation took place.
Not within my office, sir.
If Mr. Rove, this information had anything to do with the disclosing of a covert agent's identity, would Mr. Rove have had a duty to report any kind of breach?
Yes.
Oh, really? Mr. Rove would have had a duty. Now Representative Van Hollen expresses how stunned the committee is. And by the way, did you notice, if you watched, how these filthy Republican vermin, with two or three exceptions, didn't even bother to show up for the testimony?
Well, one of my personal favorites was when Lynn Westmoreland, right here in Georgia, about the best he could come up with in terms of any kind of counterattack, was asking Valerie Plame, are you a Democrat? Like, that's some kind of crime.
It's just astonishing. Anyway, Representative Van Hollen expresses how stunned the committee is that there's no White House investigation into the leak, despite of all these claims and assertions by Bush and Scott McClellan and Tony Snow and Ari Fleischer and every one of these lying bastards that they were conducting an investigation. That might be the most blatant, outrageous, straight-ahead, bald-faced lie yet.
You can hear that the members of the committee are pretty stunned that no investigation was undertaken into these breaches. My question, Mr. Nadell, I just want to understand, is it a matter of White House security policy that if there's a criminal investigation into a leak out of the White House, that the security office does not undertake its own investigation or administrative action?
We would not run a collateral investigation.
Let me just make sure I understand this. You have somebody who's accused of leaking. There's a court proceeding that may go on for years and years and years. The alleged leaker continues to be in the White House, continues to be potentially there to leak information, and it's the policy of the White House to take no action, to ask any question of the alleged leaker to determine whether or not that person's security clearance at the very least should be revoked.
An investigation should be done.
An investigation should be done, right?
Correct.
But an investigation was not done.
That's correct.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
26 before the hour. And the last one from this Nodell thug, who is not the least bit qualified to have his job. This is another one of those Bush crony jobs. That's all. This guy has absolutely no history in this sort of work. So when he sounds stupid, it's because he is. I don't care if he has a PhD. He's a stupid, half-assed man. So here, Representative Paul Hodes, Democrat from New Hampshire, really hammers home the point that there were no investigations into the Plame affair, despite all of Bush and his spokesmen's claims that he wanted to know the truth.
What discussions, if any, have you had with the President of the United States about initiating an investigation into the now clear, obvious security breaches that have occurred?
None.
What discussions, if any, have you had with the Vice President of the United States?
None.
What discussions, if any, have you had with Karl Rove?
None.
What discussions, if any, have you had with anyone about whether or not you should or should not institute an investigation into the security breaches that are the subject of this hearing today?
I've had no conversations.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Okay. Now, let's step into the Wayback Machine. Let's go back to September 30th, 2003. 3.5 years ago. Bush, in Chicago. His thoughts on Leakgate, or Traitorgate, or Treasongate. You pick one.
If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. If there's a violated law, the person will be taken care of. And so I welcome the investigation. I'm absolutely confident that the Justice Department will do a very good job. I want to know the truth.
Oh, my God. Now, some of these are so old, I apologize for the quality here. I welcome the investigation. I'm absolutely confident the Justice Department will do a very good job. Okay. Here's simple Scotty McClellan the day before, Monday, September 29th, 2003, at a White House press briefing. Reporter says, Scott, just a couple of quick clarifications. Weeks ago, when you were first asked whether Mr. Rove had the conversation with Robert Novak that produced the column, you dismissed that question as ridiculous. And I just wanted to make sure, at that time, had you talked to Carl?
I've made it very clear from the beginning that it is totally ridiculous. I've known Carl for a long time, and I didn't even need to go ask Carl because I know the kind of person that he is, and he is someone that is committed to the highest standards of conduct.
Yeah. Okay. Move ahead about a week, 10 days to Tuesday, October 7th, 2003. Reporter asked a question of Mr. Bush. Now, this is after a cabinet meeting on that morning, so I don't know about the sound quality here. The reporter says, Mr. President, beyond the actual leak of classified information, there are reports that someone in your administration was trying to actively spread the story, even calling Ambassador Wilson's wife fair game. Are you asking your staff who did that? And would it be wrong or even a fireable offense if that happened?
This is a town of where a lot of people leak, and I've constantly expressed my displeasure with leaks, particularly leaks of classified information, and I want to know. I want to know the truth. I want to see to it that the truth prevails, I believe. And I hope we can get this investigation done in a thorough way as quickly as possible. But the Justice Department will conduct this investigation.
Oh, Jesus. There was no investigation! Oh, excuse me. I had decided I was not going to yell tonight. Now, same day. Tuesday, October 7th, 2003. Scott McClellan is asked in the press briefing. Scott, former Ambassador Wilson said that reporters were told by somebody in the White House that his wife is fair game. Now, let me digress. We all know now who that was. It was Karl Rove. That came out in the Scooter Livy trial. So we know who it is. Scott, former Ambassador Wilson, said that reporters were told by somebody at this White House that his wife is fair game, and this was retribution for his speaking out, for pointing out the inconsistencies from the administration on Iraq's attempts to purchase Nigerian uranium. So the question is it ethical for a senior administration official to advance a story about an illegal disclosure of a CIA operative saying this agent is fair game?
I think it's very important to understand that there is a Washington, D.C. game of rumor and innuendo. It's the ugly side of Washington, D.C. And I'm not going to play that game. This White House, it is absurd to suggest that this White House would seek to punish someone for speaking out with a different view. That we welcome people with different views. That's a healthy part of our democracy.
Oh, Jesus God. Oh, you had enough? No, I've got more. Now let's go back to today's testimony. This time, let's listen to Valerie Plame Wilson, former employee, Central Intelligence Agency. The woman whose life was put in jeopardy, whose family was put in jeopardy, whose contacts were put in jeopardy, because George Bush, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, and the rest of these pissants are cowardly, sneaky little bastards who don't care about human life. They don't care about anything except their greed and their lust for power.
My name is Valerie Plame Wilson, and I'm honored to be invited to testify under oath before the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform on the critical issue of safeguarding classified information. I'm grateful for this opportunity to set the record straight. I've served the United States loyally and to the best of my ability as a covert operations officer for the Central Intelligence Agency. I worked on behalf of the national security of our country, on behalf of the people of the United States, until my name and true affiliation were exposed in the national media on July 14, 2003, after a leak by administration officials.
She then explains how the Cheney, Libby, Armitage, Rove, Cabal put CIA agents' lives at stake, at risk, simply to exact political revenge against her husband because he stood up and refuted their knowingly lies, their filthy, disgusting lies to take this country into a war that has so far cost almost 3,200 dead American soldiers and God or Allah only knows how many dead Iraqis.
My name and identity were carelessly and recklessly abused by senior government officials in both the White House and the State Department. All of them understood that I worked for the CIA, and having signed oaths to protect national security secrets, they should have been diligent in protecting me and every CIA officer. The CIA goes to great lengths to protect all of its employees, providing at significant taxpayers' expense painstakingly devised and creative covers for its most sensitive staffers. The harm that is done when a CIA cover is blown is grave, Not only have breaches of national security endangered CIA officers, it has jeopardized and even destroyed entire networks of foreign agents who in turn risk their own lives and those of their families to provide the United States with needed intelligence. Lives are literally at stake. We in the CIA always know that we might be exposed and threatened by foreign enemies. It was a terrible irony that administration officials were the ones who destroyed my cover. Furthermore, testimony in the criminal trial of Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff, who has now been convicted of serious crimes, indicates that my exposure arose from purely political motives.
I get tongue-tied. And that filthy, drug-using, obese, child-molesting Rush Limbaugh, somebody sent me an email, used his program today to explain how Valerie Plame came unraveled at the hearing. I'll say it again. As long as the kind of propaganda, nation-destroying propaganda that passes as right-wing talk radio is allowed on the airwaves of this country is under total and complete attack.
Hussein, because we're no longer safe. Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb.
Nuclear weapon.
You've lied to us, you frickin' liar. Your party's going to hell in a blazing ball of fire. And you lie. You fool.
He's in the jailhouse now.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Ted, before the hour. Now, again, keep in mind, the Republicans just decided not to attend this hearing today. And why should they? There is absolutely nothing that they could have added. The only Republican who has anything to say is... And we didn't even bother putting him, including him in here. It was this Lynn Westmoreland, and Davis was there from Virginia, the ranking member. But that was about it. The Republicans. The only thing Lynn Westmoreland wanted to know is if Valerie Plame and her husband were Democrats. That's it. The Republican Party is filled with louses, cockroaches, rat bastards who are useless, absolutely useless, except in this ongoing assault on this country.
Well, there are a few Republicans who are at least calling for Gonzalez's head, but I guess that goes without saying. But my funny thing about Westmoreland, the poor guy, about all he could come up with is, well, I wanted to come today because I've never talked to a spy before. He doesn't really speak well for our state.
Absolutely dumb bastard. Oh, we live in Georgia, Kathy. Come on. All right, Representative John Yarmuth, Democrat from Kentucky, asked Valerie Plame how she learned that her covert identity and classified work was revealed, ending her career, jeopardizing the lives of her children, numerous other covert agents, and ending her career. That'll teach your husband to tell the truth about uranium coming from Niger.
I found out very early in the morning when my husband came in and dropped the newspaper on the bed and said he did it. And I quickly turned and read the article, and I felt like I had been hit in the gut. It was over in an instant, and I immediately thought of my family's safety, the agents and networks that I had worked with, and everything goes through your mind in an instant.
What effect did the leak have on you professionally?
Professionally? Well, I could no longer do the work which I had been trained to do. There is no way that you can serve overseas in a covert capacity. And so that career path was terminated.
Now, Representative Elijah Cummings again, the Democrat from Maryland, asks Valerie Plame about the allegations, especially by this useless, horse-faced old bitch, Victoria Tensing, that Plame's identity, in fact, was not covert. See, Tensing, and when she went before this committee, and we're not gonna make you ill with any testimony from these Reagan retreads, but she insisted today that in spite of what the head of the CIA says, in spite of what Plame says, in spite of what everybody knows, now she's not covert. This is the kind of stuff that the big man loves. Now, I love Valerie Plame's analogy here about U.S. generals.
You said that your position was covert, but I've heard others say that you were not covert. In fact, one of the witnesses who will testify a little bit later, Victoria Tensing, is making that same argument. In an op-ed that appeared in the Washington Post on February 18th, she says it quite bluntly. She says, quote, Plame was not covert. She worked at CIA headquarters and had not been stationed abroad within 5 years, end of quote. I know there are restrictions on what you can say today, but is Ms. Tensing's statement correct?
Congressman, thank you for the opportunity. I know I'm here under oath, and I'm here to say that I was a covert officer of the Central Intelligence Agency. Just like a general is a general, whether he is in the field in Iraq or Afghanistan, when he comes back to the Pentagon, he's still a general. In the same way, covert operations officers who are serving in the field, when they rotate back for a temporary assignment in Washington, they too are still covert.
Now, come on, Valerie, you're getting too deep for a piece of human waste like Victoria Tensing or Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Hugh Hewitt or any of these people. Making an analogy about a general coming home for, rotating out of a combat zone to come back for a while and then go back. Yeah, all the sergeants, lieutenants, and captains, when they come out of a combat zone, they are no longer sergeants and captains and lieutenants. They are, oh, what are they as they're waiting to be sent back? They are, oh, I don't know, bamboo shoots, hula hoops, and orange groves. It's just incredible. Dennis Kucinich reminds us of all the many retaliatory actions the Bush crime family has taken against those who speak out against their criminal activities.
In recent weeks, we've learned that U.S. attorneys in all parts of the country were fired despite exemplary service, and several of these attorneys testified to Congress that they were being pressured to pursue cases against Democratic officials. Others believe that they were fired because they were pursuing cases against Republican officials. Now, have you followed this issue?
Yes, I have, Congressman.
And when I think of what's happened to these attorneys, I can't help but think of your case, because these could be isolated instances, but they seem to be part of a larger pattern. Do you know what happened, for example, to the former Treasury Secretary, Mr. O'Neill, when he wrote his book, The Price of Loyalty?
Yes, I'm aware of that.
And after Secretary O'Neill wrote the Bush administration was planning to overthrow Saddam Hussein in a much earlier time frame than anyone knew, Secretary O'Neill was falsely accused of leaking classified information. Did you know that Secretary O'Neill was investigated by the Treasury Department for a groundless accusation?
I believe I've read that, yes, sir.
Now, in another instance, General Shinseki warned that the United States would need several hundred thousand troops in Iraq. Ms. Wilson, do you remember what happened to General Shinseki?
Yes, I do, Congressman.
He was dismissed.
He was asked.
I'm also reminded of the case of Richard Foster, the government's chief Medicare actuary. He was actually told he'd be fired if he told Congress the truth about how much the administration's proposed drug benefit would cost. Were you aware of that, Ms. Wilson?
Yes, I was.
All right. We have more for you. Kucinich, Stephen Lynch, Democrat of Massachusetts, Chris Van Hollen, Democrat of Massachusetts. And then we're going to get into the Wayback Machine one more time. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. back, 7 past the hour. All right, we left off with Kucinich, and that's where we're going to pick up. Dennis Kucinich continues verifying the belief that Plame's covert status was revealed out of retaliation for her husband's report that the Bush crime family's claims about Iraqi nuclear weapons plans were all false, which led to Cheney's harassing of the CIA officers as well.
Now, again, these could all be isolated instances, but they seem to be part of a larger pattern. And I'm struck by what your husband, Joe Wilson, was quoted as saying in the book Hubris. Now, according to the book, here's a quote. Joe Wilson was upset and said he regarded the leak as a warning to others. Stories like this are not intended to intimidate me since I've already told my story. But it's pretty clearly intended to intimidate others who might come forward. You need only look at the stories of intelligent analysts who say they've been pressured. They may have kids in college. They may be vulnerable to these types of smears. Is this what you think was going on here?
When you look at, I will speak only to the realm of intelligence, and you have the politicizing of that, certainly Vice President Cheney's unprecedented number of visits to CIA headquarters in the run-up to the war might be one example.
That's exactly the point.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I got an email here from Prairie, too. Mike, there's a rumor on the Internet that the Bush crime family wasn't going ballistic about being exposed as lying by Ambassador Joe Wilson. CIA agents operating under cover of Brewster Jennings, that was the front company, exposed and prevented the transfer of weapons of mass destruction from Turkey to Iraq after the invasion. This prevented the so-called discovery of the weapons in Iraq. And this is why they didn't stop with exposure of Valerie Plame, but included Brewster Jennings Incorporated in order to immediately destroy the entire network so that no more revelations would be forthcoming. Representative Stephen Lynch, Democrat of Massachusetts, exposes the oft-repeated, even today, filthy Republican lie that Valerie Plame actually sent her husband to Niger.
I want to ask you, the suggestion that you were involved in sending your husband seemed to drive the leaks in an effort to discount his credibility. I want to ask you now under oath, did you make the decision to send Ambassador Wilson to Niger?
No. I did not recommend him. I did not suggest him. There was no nepotism involved. I didn't have the authority.
And I want to go back to that Senate Intelligence Committee hearing. There were three Republican senators, and this is a quote, it said, the plan to send the former ambassador to Niger was suggested by the former ambassador's wife, a CIA employee. What is your reaction to that statement in the Senate report about the genesis of your husband's trip to Niger in 2002?
Congressman, it's incorrect.
Okay.
It's been borne out in the testimony during the Libby trial, and I can tell you that it just doesn't square with the facts.
Okay.
Those additional views were written exclusively by three Republican senators.
And not only were those views written by three Republican senators, they were added to the transcript after the hearing was over. The sons of bitches even lie to corrupt the official record. They will stop at nothing. Do you understand this? God, I hope it's coming through. I got an email from somebody here who said, you know, why are you bothering to air this? Everybody knows. No, I don't think everybody does know the depth that these pigs, these destroyers of this country will go. This is the last one from today's testimony. Representative Chris Van Hollen, Democrat of Massachusetts, asks Valerie Plame about Karl Rove's involvement in illegally disclosing her status in his attempt to discredit her husband's criticism of Bush's claim in the State of the Union address about this phony yellow cake. Uh, and repeat some of simple Scotty McClellan's assertions that Bush would fire anybody in the White House who leaked Valerie's status and identity. Rove's a busy guy. He got away with this crime, and now it looks like he might get away with the firing of the U.S. attorneys for political reasons or retaliation. Man, he's all about the retribution and the gotchas.
Mr. McClellan, the then White House spokesman, said on behalf of the administration, on behalf of the president, if anyone in this administration was involved in it, meaning the leaks and the dissemination of information, they would no longer be in this administration. Do you believe there continue to be people, individuals in this administration who were involved in leaking the information about you?
Yes, Congressman. As we know, again, from the evidence that was introduced at the trial of the Vice President's former chief of staff, for one, Karl Rove clearly was involved in the leaking of my name, and he still carries a security clearance to this day, despite the President's words to the contrary, that he would immediately dismiss anyone who had anything to do with this.
With respect to Karl Rove's involvement, I would just state the testimony given by Mr. Cooper of Time magazine, who said that he was told by Karl Rove, quote, don't go too far out on Wilson, that Mr. Wilson's wife worked at the, quote, agency, and at the conclusion of the conversation, according to Mr. Cooper, Mr. Rove said, quote, I have already said too much. Can you think of any reason that Mr. Rove would make that statement if he did not know that he was engaged in wrongdoing?
Congressman, I cannot begin to speculate on Mr. Rove's intent. I just know what his words were and the effects.
Well, I can speculate, Ms. Plame. You know, Karl Rove is a termite eating at the foundation of this republic. All of these people have to be removed from office, truth seekers. They have to be. They must. Now, let me just flip back. We got time here. This is from October 7th. 2003. At the White House press briefing with Scott McClellan, the reporter says, Scott, you have said that you personally went to Libby, Rove, and Elliot Abrams to ask them if they were the leakers. Is that what happened? Why did you do that? And can you describe the conversations you had with them? What was the question you asked?
Yeah, and unfortunately, in Washington, D.C., at a time like this, there are a lot of rumors and innuendo. There are unsubstantiated accusations that are made, and that's exactly what happened in the case of these three individuals. They're good individuals. They're important members of our White House team, and that's why I spoke with them, so that I could come back to you and say that they were not involved.
Just say that they were not involved. Oh, my God! Really? Well, I guess all that trial testimony for Irving Lewis Libby then, Scott, that the other day, over the course of weeks, that was all perjured testimony, right? All perjury. My God. Why am I astonished? I'm astonished at the depth of this cover up, and this whole operation. Like this poor sap today, this director of White House security said, "There's no investigation. Never has been. Isn't one today." This reminds me of the testimony by Butterfield, the hapless jerk who went before the Senate Watergate Committee all those years ago and said. I know that's I know it's true because there's a taping system set up in the White House and everything's on tape. What? Yeah, everything's on tape. Everything's on tape? Yeah, shouldn't I have said that?
Scotty will know. Scotty has to know. Scotty's gonna know. Come and tell Scotty.
not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're still back in time here. This is October 6, 2003. Another comment by Bush, and I want you to listen to this one carefully. This is when he was sitting there with the president of Kenya and for his photo op, and a reporter said, "What about retaliation where it concerns the leaking of Valerie Plame's name? People are saying that the information was leaked in retaliation."
I don't know who leaked the information, for starters, so it's hard for me to answer that question until I find out the truth. I mean, you hear all kinds of rumors, and the best way to clarify the issue is to for full participation with the Justice Department. These are professionals who are professional prosecutors who are leading this investigation, and we look forward to... Look, I want to know. I want to know... I'd like to know who leaked. And if anybody's got any information inside our government or outside our government who leaked, they ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
Or I have a radical idea there. You could just say, "Hey, psst, Carl, Scott, Ari, Richard, hey, Cheney, hey, come here, say, y'all say anything?" How long would that have taken?
Now, you've got to understand by this comment, either Bush is kept totally in the dark or he's a liar. Now, which one would you pick? An absolute liar. Back to simple Scotty McClellan, September 29th, 03. White House press briefing. Helen Thomas says, "Scott, has the president tried to find out who outed the CIA agent Valerie Plame? And has he fired anyone in the House, White House yet?"
Well, Helen, that's assuming a lot of things. First of all, that is not the way this White House operates. The president expects everyone in his administration to adhere to the highest standards of conduct. No one would be authorized to do such a thing. Secondly, I've seen the anonymous media reports. If I could find out who anonymous was, it would make my life a whole lot easier.
Oh, my God.
Everybody also has to remember the timing of this power switch from Ari Fleischer to Scott McClellan. It was exactly at this time. It was July of 2003 that Ari the Liar left and Simple Scotty came in, and I think it was because they knew Ari couldn't answer these questions
right.
with any kind of immunity and say, "Oh, I didn't know," because he was intimately involved with all of it.
Sure.
So they had to. This is the reason Ari was shuffled out the door.
And this is also the reason that Ari Fleischer was given immunity to testify in the Libby trial, which had nothing to do with outing Valerie Plame and everything to do with obstruction of justice, lying, fraud, and committing crimes. That's why the son of a bitch is going to go to jail.
And it's all just to protect Karl Rove and Dick Cheney, as far as I can tell.
Well,
it's
also to keep the smoke screen going. And to give these killers something to hide behind, because I really believe that if the majority of the American people, let me rephrase that, if the majority of the people who have seen their family members killed in Iraq, if they came to the understanding clearly and coldly that George Bush and all these sons of bitches lied, their sons, their fathers, their daughters, their brothers and sisters into death and an early grave, a miserable death in Iraq, if the majority of those family members knew that it could accept that that was the case, George Bush and Dick Cheney and the entire White House staff would be dragged into the streets by these people and stomped to death. You know it, and I know it. Now, obviously, before they could get their hands on these bastards, they would all be shot dead by the uniformed Secret Service that surrounds that corrupt den of scorpions. But if the people who have so unfairly been forced to bear the burden of this murderous adventure by this son of a bitch in the White House. They would go after him and they wouldn't stop because they wouldn't care any longer. Their father is dead. Their son is dead. Their daughter was blown up. Their mother is dead. Their uncles and brothers are dead. Because these son of a bitches lied. Now think about that.
Condoleezza, check my pussy.
There's Thomas Halliburton, mass destruction me. I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puffy. Yep, 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 yep. They need to shut their yaps. The big dog's over here. I will rule the world forever. I'm straight and white and male, American and free.
Condoleezza, check my pussy.
Hello,
left out? Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Twenty-six before the hour. All right, this is the last one, and we'll use the last roughly 20 minutes of the program for your phone calls. So if you want to call now, 800-989-1480, and just tell me your opinion of what you've heard. But this is the only topic I want to cover tonight, okay? This is also back in 03, September 29th, White House press briefing. Scott McClellan passes the buck to John Ashcroft. Reporter says, Scott, you keep saying if there was a leak. But Ambassador Joe Wilson has been all over the place on ABC this morning and other media outlets saying that he and his wife were outed, that he's confirmed it, that she was a CIA operative and that her identity has been revealed. So if that's the case, why shouldn't the president be proactive about this and trying to find out where that leak came from? Scott, isn't the president concerned when there's a leak of this magnitude that could threaten someone's life?
If it's a quote senior administration official, we should go to every single agency. I think that's the Department of Justice can do that, and that's what they're charged with doing, so they will look into it. If there's specific information relating to the White House, someone is welcome to bring it to our attention, but I've not seen any information beyond what is in the media reports to suggest White House involvement.
Oh my God. It's incredible. It's just incredible. And as our guest said earlier tonight, well, he didn't say it. I said it. And I've asked this question on the program before. What will it take to bring millions of people into the street to say, we don't want to see the death of our country, of our system of government? We don't want to see it replaced with Elliot Abrams, Irving Libby, Dick Cheney, George Bush, fascism. What's it going to take? What's it going to take?
Well, we've said it before in this show. I think that they learned their lesson with Ari, and they made sure that McClellan didn't know anything. I mean, one of the reasons I think we called him Simple Scotty was because he's like this idiot they have in there now, Tony Slow. He didn't have answers. They kept these people in the dark precisely so
right.
They couldn't be subpoenaed.
Right, but now the answers are out. And the answers essentially came out during the Irving Libby trial. And the right wing termites in this country are making the case that Patrick Fitzgerald did not investigate who actually leaked because there was no crime committed, because Valerie Plame was not a covert agent. In that regard, I guess I fault Patrick Fitzgerald. I don't know what he was trying to do. He did nail Dick Cheney's chief of staff, and knowing how Dick Cheney works, you know damn good and well that Cheney's chief of staff would not go to the bathroom unless Cheney was there to unzip his pants.
I don't think you can blame Fitzgerald, because there just wasn't anybody who was going to give up Roe over Cheney, because, you know, they don't have death wishes. So, you know, Libby was literally as high as he could get there.
An email here from Rum Runner in Oklahoma, and he says, the subject line is just liar. He says, what in the hell has happened? Not only is the highest leadership of the United States telling lies, but others, as you have said, are lying by remaining silent. What do we tell our young ones? Shall we say that this is okay? I don't know what to say. I'm glad that all of my children are adults, way into adulthood, except Molly, and she's too young to understand this. All right, let's get the jerk off first. Harry is calling from New York. All right, Harry, come on the program and make an ass of yourself. Go ahead. All right, goodbye. Hang up. Get away from him. Harry wanted to talk about how he couldn't care less about the Plame affair. Yeah, which you know, Harry, you're such a dumbass. Go away. I don't even want to hear him on the program. Dump him. Bruce is calling from California. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I just wanted to make a quick comment and thank Kathy for her diligence. You've made mention several times about her sitting there recording all these programs.
Oh, she does this all by herself.
Yeah, I sat there and watched the entire hearing myself. My wife recorded it for me, and I watched it after it was done. And so, I mean, I know that although it was fascinating, and I had the same feeling you did, like I couldn't tear myself away from it.
Yeah.
At the same time, I realized how tedious and how much effort she puts in. And I just want to, you know, just make mention of that. And I'll also say I was pretty disgusted by what I saw. You know, I couldn't believe. I think the same reaction that most people did when you find out the White House didn't even investigate it. It's like, are they kidding?
Yeah, you know, the person who wrote to me tonight said, why are you surprised? Well, that's a valid point. I've spent 6 years of this corrupt administration railing against it. Why would I be surprised about anything? But what really shocked and affected me today was to see the actual testimony. This guy in charge of White House security.
Yeah, Nolan.
Yeah, saying, nope, nothing, uh-uh, no investigation, never was. Isn't now, probably won't be.
Yeah,
it's just astonishing to hear that.
Yeah, and he didn't even follow up with on Roe's security clearance after 5 years.
Right, just nothing. As Valerie Plame pointed out, every one of these bastards who outed her and violated the law still have top security clearances.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It is, and I thank you and Kathy for all the work that you guys do. I just feel like I can't go to bed without listening to you guys. I mean, I swear it's all, I'm almost neurotic about it. And, I never miss a show. And it's like, you know, I've got to have my Mike Malloy fix.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. We do appreciate it, Bruce. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for checking in. Yeah, that was a nice thing to say about Kathy. It is true. I mean, we're a two-person operation here. There are other programs on the air that may play sound clips that have actualities, so on and so forth, and they're usually staffed by 5, 6, 7 people. I know when we worked at Air America, Al Franken had a staff of about 20. And there are other people at Air America who have these enormous production staffs. Now, I'm not necessarily complaining. That's just the way it goes. It's rock and roll. But, I said it back then, the quality of what you hear on this program in terms of production values, I'm not necessarily talking about me. You either like what I do or you don't. I'm talking about the production values, are as good as any program you'll hear anywhere in talk radio. You know, Rush Limbaugh makes, $200 million a year or some ridiculous figure and has a staff of 80. And when I don't know what the program's like now, but from what I hear from people, it sounds no different from this in terms of production value or the quality of the broadcast. So I think it was very nice of him to say that, Kathy, and I just want to add my my two cents to it too. This program would not be what it is without her doing what she does. And on a day like today, I take the kid and we disappear. Molly and I disappear for 6-7 hours so Kathy can do this. That's prior to going on the air. Then we go on the air. So anyway, you're a good producer. You're a really good producer, Kathy.
Aww.
Yeah, well, back to your phone calls. Tim is calling from Los Angeles. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mike, for having me on the air. And I just want to say that when I was listening to this, I was like, oh, my God, what is the U.S. coming to?
Oh, I know.
And I'm mad. I'm upset. I couldn't drive, that's why I pulled over, but I don't know, I just can't think right now, because they're doing this to Americans, they're killing Americans, they're destroying the fabric of what America is supposed to be. I mean, they just don't care. When everything's done and over with, I wonder how many people are going to be prosecuted after this.
Well, if it's up to the Democrats, probably nobody. If the American people rise up and drive this crime syndicate out of office and force the Democrats to develop some spine and pull together courts of law, call them what you want. I mean, Bush has set the precedent that we now have tribunals. We don't have to go through the court of law. We don't have to honor the Constitution. We don't have to honor habeas corpus. We don't have to provide witnesses. We don't have to confront the accused with the evidence we have prior to the trial. We don't have to grant the accused legal representation. Bush has set this precedent. So when the time comes that Bush and his cronies are put on trial by a people's tribunal, perhaps we will insist that the same rules that applied to American citizens and non-American citizens will apply to them. And maybe at some point, this is what I was discussing with Steve tonight, maybe at some point the American people will say we've had enough and we will get these people out of office, legally and peacefully, of course. Tim, I have to leave it there. Thanks for checking
in. Thank you very much, Mike, and peace be with you, brother.
Thank you. Ten before the hour, Reg just sent this to me. This is from Associated Press. Christians in D.C. for war protest. Here's what it says. Thousands of people gathered for a Christian anti-war worship service Friday night at the Washington National Cathedral, kicking off a weekend of protests around the country to mark the fourth anniversary of the war in Iraq. The service was to be followed by a candlelight march to Lafayette Park across from the White House. Organizers of the event said more than 700 people have volunteered to risk arrest by crossing the street and demonstrating on the sidewalk in front of the White House. The Reverend Jim Wallace, founder of Sojourners Call to Renewal, one of the groups sponsoring the event, said millions of people around the world sadly believe this is a Christian war. We have to clear up the confusion. Civil rights historian Taylor Branch, who planned to participate, said it is important for churches to be leaders in the anti-war movement. Branch, who is also a Presbyterian elder, said, quote, "It seems to me sad that Christians so easily have put aside our core beliefs that we love our enemies and we do not believe in violence," end quote. Other organizations behind the event include the American Friends Service Committee, Lutheran Peace Fellowship, Sisters of Mercy of the Americas, and 24 Protestant and Catholic groups. The Friday night events mark the beginning of what is planned as a weekend of protests ahead of Tuesday's anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion, which began on March 20th, 2003. On Saturday morning, a coalition of protest groups has a permit for up to 30,000 people to march from the Vietnam War Memorial across the Potomac River to the Pentagon. Smaller demonstrations are planned in cities across the country. I think it's important. Thanks, Reggie. I think it's important for all of us, and especially for someone like me, to understand that there are Christians in this country who believe that this war is an abomination and are doing something, putting their bodies out there to stop it. The right wing, the dominionist Christians, who I've said a million times are not followers of Christ, but the ones who have the microphones, the ones that have the cameras, the ones that have the 10,000-member congregations who are no more there to celebrate the birth of Jesus or the life of Jesus than they are to molest children, they're the ones that the Dobsons and Falwells and Robertsons and these real Christ murderers are the ones who get or the Jesus murderers, are the ones who get the attention. And I guess I don't say it enough. They're the ones that just make me sick. You know, I know that there are people of faith who believe the same thing that you believe, that I believe, peace and justice and decency and honor and ethical behavior and morality that is not situational. And I guess I don't say that enough on this program. But I'm aware of it. I am aware of it. You know, we mock the Ted Haggards and the Falwells and the Dobsons and the rest of these awful, awful, awful people. The guy that runs the Coral Ridge Ministries. People who are just, they're shills for Satan. They really are. And if there is any truth to their religious mythology, then they have places in the deepest pits of hell reserved with their names on them. And but people like Jim Wallace who's the rabbi who runs Tikkun? Who is that? Michael Lerner. People Ibrahim Cooper of the Islamic organization, CAIR, C-A-I-R in this country. I respect the fact that there are people of religious belief who do believe in justice and honor and decency. More power to them. Thanks to Ian Huff, who answered your calls this evening, and is our associate producer, handles everything from Phoenix, engineers the program. Chris in Minnesota, who's our senior correspondent. Thanks to Mark Marshall, who is our webmaster. And thanks to the militant moderators at MikeMalloy.com who run the message board there. Did you go to MarkMarshall.com yet? Another shameless plug for our webmaster. And check out his new CD, New Eye. And don't forget, NovaMradio.com. Go there and sign up for what's available, okay? If you can afford it. This program is always available free over the air and through the internet, but beyond that, Nova M Radio has what they have there available. So, one last thing, you know, have fun tomorrow. Be careful with the drinking. I don't know how we Irish got taxed. See, with a name like Mike Malloy, obviously it's an Irish name. I claim the Italian parentage more than I claim the than the Irish. But on St. Paddy's Day, it's very easy to be Irish with a name like Michael Dennis Malloy and Molly Malloy, Molly Bay Malloy. So Molly and I, and Kathy, if we can get her out of the house, we're going to go out and drink some beer tomorrow. And not Molly, come on.
Maybe not Molly. No, we're going to wait till she's 12 like everyone else in Georgia.
Yeah, that's true. But we're going to go to the parade in downtown Atlanta or over here in suburban Conyers or someplace and look and watch a parade. So if you're out and about tomorrow, I know everybody says it, but you know, be careful, okay? Just God, we have such smash-ups and deaths on the highways here in Atlanta. It's unbelievable. It's just horrifying. So if you do the St. Paddy's thing, be careful. And isn't it a bitch? I mean, it really is. This is what bugs me, my Irish, that, you know, we celebrate our day by getting sloppy drunk and puking in the streets while all over the shoes of the marching bands. Can't do that. Take care. Have a great weekend, all right? I'll see you Monday. I'm Mike Malloy. Keep it lit. And have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.